to Gunkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
In this episode, we're tackling Autechre's divisive ninth LP, Choristus, and the entire Choristus extended universe, including the Choristus Versions bonus disc, the digital exclusive EP, and the mammoth Choristus Quadrange EP, all from 2008. I must apologize for the lack of bonus episode last week and for being a little late with this one. We both had some personal stuff pop up out of nowhere, but we should be back on track with weekly episodes from here on out. On that note, we're going to work as many of your emails into this episode as we can, and I'm sorry, by the way, I haven't responded to so many of you yet. I'm getting to work on that right now, I promise. But we'll tackle the rest on next week's bonus episode, where we'll also talk about the recently reconstructed 2008 live set. So, you still have time to tell us what you think about Choristus, and you can start sending us your thoughts on our next main episode topic, Oversteps and Move of 10, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Before we get started, our plan here is to spend some time on the main Choristus album, then rifle through the Versions, the digital exclusive EP, and the Quadrange EP, then circle back to talk about the Choristus era as a whole. 47 tracks, if I'm doing my math right, which I'm probably not. The idea is to take it one release at a time, as if we were, you know, living through 2008 again. But we might end up jumping around and things could get pretty messy, and honestly, that would be pretty appropriate for this album. So Dan, what background info do we need to know about Choristus?
Autechre released Choristus on January 29th, 2008. That's about 3 years after Untilted, making this the longest gap between AE albums up to this point. As the story goes, the Untilted tour had been pretty extensive, and when it was over, Sean got to work on moving to a new house in Manchester. So while much of their gear was in storage, the guys tried to record the 2005 live set and ended up improvising tons of new material instead. In a 2008 interview, Sean explains that a lot of the album tracks are edited down jams, some of them hour-long pieces we made in a day and then worked them down. We'd have a 15-minute jam, a 10 or 7-minute track, and end up with a 3 or 4-minute track, and we just kept them all. In another interview, Rob describes the process as Versions mentality, like back in the day when Depeche Mode would put out a single, you knew that a week later you could go and buy the 12-inch and it would have 6 versions and they were all better. Indeed, 2008 would see the release of many of these versions, but we'll of course get to that a little later.
Yeah, in regard to the critics, Choristus was actually quite warmly received. Pitchfork praised the concise track lengths and called it, quote, the most listenable album they've created in a decade. AllMusic snarkily wrote, not since LP5 has being impressed been so obviously secondary to enjoyment. And The Wire named it the 16th best album of the year. Fans, on the other hand, have been less impressed, I would say. At a 3.35 average rating, Choristus is the lowest rated main Autechre album on Rate Your Music. I always like to ask you, Dan, what is your sense of Choristus's status nowadays?
That's difficult to say.
It is.
You know, it's definitely the lowest rated on Rate Your Music. It's one I feel like I don't see discussed too often on the AE subreddit. It does kind of feel like the the stepchild in the AE discography, maybe.
Yeah, it's weird because I didn't really realize when I started doing research for this that actually, I mean, it wasn't like critically acclaimed, you know. Autechre were a little bit on the outs as far as critical reception goes at this time. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty much universally seen as like a step back in the right direction or something interesting and something to be excited about. And yet I remember at the time, you know, fans being pretty disappointed. And I just feel like fans are quite open about not loving this album. Like every once in a while, you'll see one of these, you know, defenders say like, oh, it's my favorite or it's my second favorite or whatever. But that is pretty rare, you know?
Yeah, of course. I think I've mentioned this before, but you know, on the AE subreddit, like, people put, you know, the flair and of records. I don't see the Choristus one very often, you know? And I think that, yeah, that's a good barometer for people's feelings, I think.
Yeah, it just seems to be like sort of a consensus among fans that it's their worst album, which we will interrogate today. On that note, what is your personal history with Choristus, Dan? And just so I don't have to ask this over and over again today, like maybe this whole period in general.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about the last couple episodes, this middle period, you know, for me, has always been the period that I'm least familiar with and the period that I, you know, don't really visit just on its own very much. It's always just sort of in the context of listening to other Autechre records. You know, I'll pop into one of these. And Choristus is like where that sort of changes for me. You know, I sort of see it as the definite like end and this whole period in general, the like end of that, you know, sort of, I don't want to call it a slump, but at least the, you know, the middle period of Autechre. So I, you know, I've never spent nearly as much time with it, especially not the the sort of bonus stuff, you know, and everything as I have leading up to this podcast, especially since we took a little extra time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've always kind of been disappointed with it. I mentioned before that this was the first new Autechre album since I had become a fan, and I was pretty excited about it. And I just felt like some tracks I really liked, others I totally didn't. And I never was putting it on because of what a disjointed listening experience it was. You know, it was like, I never wanted to just, I'm not the kind of person to make my own playlist or whatever. And I was never going to throw it on because I didn't want to sit through all the ones that I didn't like. So, you know, I would just every once in a while check it out, be like, oh yeah, I remember liking these tracks and not liking these others. Pretty much felt the same way. And yet, you know, in the years since, I do throw it on sometimes when I'm, you know, whenever I'm going through like a little Autechre phase, I will usually give this a listen. I will usually give the Quadrange EP a listen just because maybe it's a little bit more consistent in mood. We'll talk about that, but it's like something nice to kind of read while I'm listening to, particularly that last track, which of course we'll talk about. But, you know, so I've spent a lot of time with this, but, you know, this was like the time where I was like, I'm going to figure this thing out. You know, I'm going to figure out what the fuck is Choristus and like, why is it an album? You know, so we'll see how successful I was with that. I want to ask you how you would describe the overall sound of Choristus, but as has been the case with the last few albums, Sean has provided his own description in the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything, saying, Choristus is meant to flow like a long dream. You know how doors lead to different chapters and worlds before you realize. So what do you think of that? And how would you describe it?
You know, I mean, I think that's not a bad description of the record. You know, you sort of alluded to it there. There's not like a really consistent, you know, mood of the record, especially compared to, you know, some of the ones we just got out of, you know, Confield and Draft and everything, which I think feel like, you know, very much from like the, you know, one sort of world. Choristus like really is that sort of like mix mash kind of, you know, there's not like one overall kind of theme to it, unless that theme is, you know, the disjointedness of it. I'm gonna break the rule. We haven't broke the rule in a while.
That's true.
So I'll go ahead and break it. I think it like sort of foreshadows like what will come with like NTS and stuff. You know, the kind of mixtape
data dump.
Yeah, data dump mixtape sort of feel for a record.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, and we will definitely talk about that in more depth. But at the same time, I do feel like it has kind of consistent flavor, like a consistent vibe in a weird way. It's not a musically, sonically diverse album, really. Like, it's a pretty consistent sound, you know?
It sounds like it's, like, all made on the same, you know, setup. You know, like, not necessarily, like, it's the same instrument every time. But, you know, it's not like they've rewritten the software or the hardware or anything.
Right.
Each song, yeah.
Yeah, it feels very much like just the same constituent parts being assembled in many different ways. And, you know, if I try to think of ways to describe the whole thing, words like dreamy come to mind. I mean, it's a very lush record. Mm-hmm. There's so much cavernous reverb on everything, like lots of echoes and like little, you know, just tinkling, plinking, clanging sounds in like wide open spaces. It feels like this whole record is being played like in a deep cave or something, a wet cave. Like everything is just dripping and just drenched in reverb. And I mean, would you use the word like almost psychedelic or something? You know what I mean? Like dream poppy with this album?
Yeah, it does sort of have like that. You know, I didn't really think about that, but when you say it, you know, psychedelic like does sort of fit this well, you know. I mean, not maybe in the traditional sense, you know, it doesn't sound like a Grateful Dead record or something, but I mean, we've talked about it before, like Autechre like sort of is the Grateful Dead of electronic music, you know, in the sense of the jam bandness and stuff, and I think here that really shines, which I think we'll get into more, you know, with the jam thing. But I think psychedelia or psychedelia, whatever, kind of fits in here on Choristus as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, lots of lush ambience, lots of drone. That's something I want to bring up later. Is like, I was thinking while listening to this, like, what is the difference between ambient and drone? Because I feel like some tracks on this clearly ambient or clearly drone, or sometimes somewhere in the middle. But it's like, there's a lot of that. Let's just say a lot of like getting lost in these soundscapes. You know, I want to talk about the, you know, track lengths a little bit more. Obviously, they are all very short. You know, to me, these tracks are pretty concise is a word I would use to describe them. Like they always kind of start off, they're going, you know, like it was almost becoming like by the time of Draft, I feel like I was complaining a little bit about the Autechre trick of like every track kind of like slowly assembling mm-hmm. itself and then, you know, or vice versa, or it would like start and then it would like slowly deconstruct or whatever. But here, like they are what they are with the first second, like they're just going, even the ambient pieces, like they are what they are. They're doing their thing. And then they usually kind of shift in one direction or make like one move and then they come to a clear stop. Do you know what I mean? Do you see these as like kind of concise pieces?
Yeah, definitely. And I think like to with Sean's like little description, you know, it's like a dream and you're opening different doors, you know, like opening a door. It's like you're coming into it, it's already, you know, it's already happening. It, you know, like starting a TV show in the middle or something, you know, like it doesn't have to build up and stuff because you right. didn't come at the start, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And it's, yeah, so it's like it grabs you, but I just feel like it's not, like, would you use the word repetitive? Because I feel like these tracks, they're sort of simple in a way, right? But they just feel like they're kind of in the middle of shifting, like going somewhere, and you just hear like one clear from point A to point B usually. And it's like, you know what I mean? It's not, it's like simple, but not just repetitive.
Yeah, no, I agree, you know, like repetitive, you know, is like the exact same thing happening or, you know, very, very similar. It's difficult to like separate those two things, but you're right. You know, I think on some earlier work, you know, you're starting with like such, you know, like a bare bones, part of the piece. And then, you know, it all adds up, you know, you're getting more and more pieces and then you've got the whole thing here. Like you've sort of got all the pieces, but they're not doing, they're still shifting and changing and, you know, moving around. In fact, I think like some of the songs here, like, and I'll say it right now, this is the hard with 47 tracks. Yes. I don't know the track titles super well this podcast, but you know, just in general, you know, a lot of the songs here like do really kind of change around, and I think it's like really kind of one of the least repetitive records. I mean, there's definitely some tracks that have, you know, repetition and everything, but I think there's a lot of you know, change in this record.
Yeah, it's just weird because if I think back about, like, if I just looked at this track listing, how short the tracks are, I would assume based on the way that earlier Autechre tracks had gone, like on Confield, we talked about like how Seafern, mm-hmm. it's like a loop, but it's a really huge loop. Like, so you don't really, you know, it sounds sort of random, but you don't recognize like when it's repeating and stuff.
Yeah,
I would just assume looking at this that like, oh, okay, 2.5 minutes, like we're going to get, you know, just a couple repetitions of some loop, you know, but it's not just like looping. It's like sort of this, everything is in like the process of shifting. And it's just interesting to me how, I don't know, just how like deliberate they are, like how they're like on their way somewhere. Like you start in the middle, they're on their way somewhere, they get there and then it like ends. It's just very like different, I feel like, for Autechre. You know, Sean's quote that I read a second ago, it seems like it's actually more about the overall structure of the album, right? Like all these different dream doors and stuff. And I think in this case, we should actually discuss that a lot earlier than we normally would. Listener Ellen wrote in to say that the opener, Altabiz, was a very pleasant surprise, and I thought that I was in for a treat in regard to the rest of the compositions. How wrong I was. With the exception of Altabiz, it was just a collection of cutting room floor snippets. Listener Sean is a bit more charitable, comparing Choristus to the Beatles' White Album, the most famous case of, you know, the cutting room floor approach being the whole point of the album, adding, you're going to get a couple obla-di obla-das in there, and that's okay.
So, I love that.
So what do you think about... I love that song, by the way. But... what do you think about like the overall structure? Like, is there a structure at all to this album? And how would you describe it?
I mean, the structure is a little weird because that listener's right. Altabuzz, I think, does sort of give you the wrong impression, you know, coming mm-hmm. in. I I don't remember the first time I listened to this, but you know, I can imagine being, you know, I think Altabuzz like sort of is more in that world of you know, Confield or Draft or something, and it's I could see like thinking, oh, you know, just kind of more of that, and then it really sort of, you know, changes from there. But the White Album approach, I think you know, that's a good description of this record. You know, it is sort of that cutting floor thing, and I think, like, especially with all the, you know, the data dump we get of all the EPs and everything, and, you know, versions and all, like, it really becomes that, you know, to the extreme, like, you know, more than the White Album even is, you know, it's like the, you know, the White Album deluxe edition or something, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I used to kind of feel that way, though, like, okay, the lack of structure here is the structure. Like, it's just, you could enter at any point, you could go any direction, you could mix it around, listen on shuffle or whatever. But listening these past 2 weeks just obsessively, you know, I started to feel like, okay, so Altabuzz is a good example, where it's like this just absolutely dreamy, like, the greatest ambient track maybe I've ever heard. I feel like it's better than anything on Sign, and that is not a slight on Sign. It's just, I want to praise this track to high heaven because it is so great. And then it's kind of jarring when the PLC starts and you get this kind of like bouncy, like bubbling kind of, you know, like frenetic beat. But then you start to hear these like absolutely enormous lush chords sort of popping in way underneath. And it just feels like the through line, you know, like you realize like, oh, there's the Altabuzz in here. And every track almost has that kind of lushness. Sometimes it's like, there are just these little gurgling, dripping noises. And there's just like this huge reverbed out bass swell, you know what I mean, like way underneath. You just feel like you're in this huge space. It almost feels like Altabuzz like teaches you, it's like, pay attention to this, you know, while you're listening, like, see where this vibe pops up, because it's going to keep popping up, sometimes in really obvious ways, sometimes in really subtle ways. But it kind of gives you like the little through line, like it's like your little lantern to like wade through this thing. I also started to feel like, in a weird way, the album kind of goes like, you know, it starts off with ambient, but then it goes right into like pretty upbeat tracks. And then it seems to like slowly get more droney and soundscapey. And then it kind of picks back up again, let's say with like Tanka Kern. These are a lot of tracks that I never even tried to say before we started recording, so bear with me. But and it kind of like keeps the energy up. Then it kind of goes back into like weird soundscape ambient. And then it kind of picks back up again. And then it ends back on, you know, it feels like,
yeah,
you know, like kind of on a journey.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like, you know, they just put all these tracks in a bag and pulled them out, you know, like the drug use kind of, you know, Aphex, you know, sort of approach. It doesn't feel like that at all. I think we've mentioned it with every record so far. I think they put a lot of, you know, thought into track listing and sequencing. And yeah, you're right. They do a good job here. It does like sort of have this, you know, up and down, you know, sort of, oh, like a sine wave, you know, kind of thing going on. Because I think it's even sort of bookended with, you know, Altabuzz is
right,
you know, sort of ambient and all, and Altex 9X or whatever, you know, is sort of in that same world.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's always like a not to or no to, the penultimate track. So it does sort of, it starts you in that realm, it sort of ends you in that realm, even though it feels like a lot less lush and a lot more kind of desolate by the end. But it to me, it feels like a pretty clear through line and a pretty clear journey. So, you know, on the other hand, in contrast to some of those listeners, listener Joe calls Choristus, quote, a tribute to mixtapes. You were kind of saying that earlier. He adds, there are mixtapes that feel as cohesive as actual albums. It feels to me like Sean and Rob made endless amounts of music in this era with the hardware setup they had, and that this is almost like an amazingly sequenced sampler of their favorite bits. He adds that it's most effective when listened to as a whole. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I sort of mentioned it, but I was beating around the bush a little bit because I knew we were going to get to this email, and I really like it. I think that is like a really good description of Choristus, especially when you have the context of all the EPs and extra stuff. It really does feel like, you know, a mixtape sort of record, you know, especially with the, you know, almost sort of snippets of songs, especially when you get into versions and stuff and see sort of you know the bigger version of that track and all. And he's right, you know, like a mixtape in the sense that like you know, like a DJ mixtape, like where they're you know, it's not just like something you made for your girlfriend or something. Like, you know, it can be cohesive. Yeah. It can, like, you can make a journey, you know, through music that you yourself didn't record. Of course, Ottekker, you know, did record it, but it does feel like that a lot, you know. When you put everything here in the someone on Twitter tweeted us, it was the Choristus cinematic universe. When you when you take the whole, you know, Choristus universe and you put it all, you know, together, it's pushing like 7-8 hours or something.
4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean that's too much for a record. You know, and then so I think like Choristus, you know, the album, you're getting 73 minutes here of like the best of kind of mixtape, you know, compilation sort of thing.
Yeah, but like with a real attention to flow, like how a mixtape should be, you know. Yeah. And like I was reading, you know, I read so many interviews for this episode. It's weird because I don't know if it's like they just did a lot more interviews than usual, or that we're entering the period where like these interviews are still on the internet, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I was wondering that too, because you always signaled to me, and I did think, yeah, there's like way more than normal.
There's so many, but one of them, Sean says, like, I don't really listen to new music, but I love J Dilla's Donuts, right, which came out what 2 years before this, and that is like the perfect example of this. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even be surprised if he was kind of inspired, if they were inspired like in their approach here a little bit, in that like such short tracks, like such little snippets, but it's so meticulously sequenced and flowing, you know, maybe even like the Avalanches,
since I left you
or whatever, you know, like it's a mixtape, but just as Joe says here, like some mixtapes flow even better than albums, and albums like Donuts are all about that consistent flow through many different worlds. I feel like that's really achieved here. Let's talk about the album's development a little bit. Do you hear it as an outgrowth from Untilted and the 2005 tour? Or does it sound like something completely new?
You know, it sounds pretty different than Untilted, I think. I mean, I'm not a huge Untilted fan. I'll say it. I like Choristus quite a bit more than Untilted. Mm. I think, you know, that 2005 tour, the only show of that I'm really familiar with is that Glasgow one, which is, you know, fairly famous. I it does sort of remind me of that. You know, that is like That show is like one of the most like fun Ottekker like things to listen to, yeah. I think. And I kind of feel like Choristus is kind of the fun record, especially like in this period of you know, after, you know, Draft and Confield and Untilted, which I think are like not fun, you know, albums. They're kind of going back to it, and it really does like, you know, feel, you know, I don't know that I... And maybe it's just me not being, you know, a great enough listener, but I don't feel like I specifically am like, oh, you know, that was a piece from that show or something.
Right.
But you know, like just the overall sort of like mood of it, I think is similar.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, to me, it's quite different from Untilted. You know, Untilted was very dry. Like it was very crisp. Mm-hmm. And this is like, you know, and it was like right in your face, like drilling into your head, like we talked about a lot. You know, this album is like quite distant. It's very wet, like I said. It's like so reverby and like dreamy. It just feels like, you know, far away, and you're like sort of, you know, bending your ear to like listen to all the details that are like in the murk there. You know, I also feel like Untilted was, it had sort of like a weird throwback sound, you know, to like the early spirit of DJing, and a lot of the sounds there, they just didn't sound like totally invented. They sounded like a little nostalgic, actually. And this to me sounds kind of like, it makes me think of LP5 in the sense of like cutting edge, like just cutting edge, like the cleanest laser precision type of sounds, you know? And mm-hmm. we talked about like how LP5, it's, you're not like blown away by the sound design. It just sounds like the cleanest, like brightest, loveliest sounds that were possible at the time or something with whatever simple equipment they had. And this kind of has that same approach. You know, I also feel like the 2005 sets, they do get like a lot bassier and a lot dreamier. And I just kept thinking about this, like, well, how does it connect then? And I started thinking about tracks on Untilted, like Augmatic Disport. I talked about this during the episode, how like there's a part in the middle underneath where you can hear like the most lush, dreamy synth chords, and they're like really, really deep in there. Or like Sublimit, the way it kind of like, you feel like you keep going deeper in the track. And as you get deeper, it does get like dreamier, like you're underwater or something a little bit toward the end there. And I just started to feel like, you know, maybe if you took some of the pieces of Untilted and the stuff that they were playing on the 2005 tour and you just kept trying to go deeper, it would start to sound like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I could see that. I think that's sort of like how, you know, we always kind of like Odd Tech are so easy to like divide into periods and those periods like even divide into records like so well, you know, like no record really sounds like the record that precedes it or anything. But I think you're right. You know, like it is like a continuous like flow. If you like really, you know, dig in, you know, I think the live sets are sort of like the little key to that. It's never like such a big jump as it maybe seems on paper, you know, like not in a negative way, you know, not take anything away from them. In fact, I think it's like super cool. I think that's one of the cool things about like listening to the bootlegs and live shows and stuff is like getting to see part of that process or whatever. But I don't think that they're a group of like huge steps really, you know. I think they're making so much music and so much of it we probably never hear that it all is such a gradual. Yeah, it's just like you get those chunks, you know, here and there.
Yeah, and I feel like this is a rare occasion where you actually do get to see like the steps a little bit more clearly. And, you know, you just like when they're playing live, I'm sure that just because of who they are, they keep like trying to pull new things out of the same sounds and out of the same loops and the same tracks and stuff. And what happens there is you start to like pull out the stuff that was like really underneath, like the subliminal stuff. And then I feel like if you just took Untilted, you pulled everything that was like way underneath it and made that the front, the star, it would sort of sound like Choruses. That's my theory. Now, listener Jordan says, after Draft, Untilted sounds like they wanted to make something fun, something I wanted rather than trying to defend some title. And Choruses takes it further with a laid-back jam album. This is a clear cutoff point from their previous work, which you can hear in this less clean sound in favor of a more live-sounding casual album. Gone are the calculated programmed sounds. In Choruses, the boys get strange once again. They get experimental, more experimental than before because they are playing on this album. Playing with sounds, playing with grooves. It's anarchy and they can do anything they want. It's like they were making these jams and just stuck anything on the record if it sounded good. On the same note, listener Sean describes the process as, quote, letting go of perfectionism. So what do you think and what do you make of the jammy quality here despite the very short track lengths?
I love it. You know, I honestly have a hard time like understanding why this record is you know, kind of widely regarded as the worst Odd Techer album.
Yeah.
I love the jamminess of it. I love the you know, what that listener was just talking about, the playing, you know, is you can hear like I just love like the fucking around with like audio equipment and stuff. And I feel like here it sounds like them having fun with that equipment and experimenting with it and finding, you know, like in some of those interviews we read, they said that this is, you know, pretty much all hardware. And I think it sounds like it and it feels like it. And it's something we hadn't really got for the last few albums. I really do like sort of feel like this is, I don't want to say a return to form, but, you know, kind of them getting back on track. And like listener Sean said, it is like letting go of perfectionism. You know, I think the middle period of Odd Techer, the reason I sort of have the issue, you know, why it's not my favorite is it does sometimes become like a little too perfect, like a little too worked at, you know, there's none. It completely loses like any sense of the ability for like you know, like as a normal person to reach those heights, you know, or anything. This is like sort of back to like, yeah, like it sounds, I mean, it's almost like the garage rock, you know, kind of record again.
Yeah,
you know, sort of thing. I actually love this record.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree. It has kind of that like cool, yeah, almost like a Chiastic Slide quality of like them just in the lab, them in the garage, like tinkering, you know. To me, I feel like Untilted, which I love a lot more than you, is like almost the most fun Odd Techer record ever. Like I'll save that until we get all the way to the end just so I can make sure. But to me, it feels like just Odd Techer having an absolute blast. This, you know, it feels more like a creative kind of fun. Like a lot of the tracks are like quite mesmerizing, like quite dark, quite menacing and brooding in places. And, you know, I don't always think, there are a couple points, exceptions to this, but I don't always think of like fun when I listen to this, but I do feel like they're on like a quest, you know, they're just searching and searching. And, you know, Untilted was kind of like, they had all these ideas and they couldn't wait to show them all to us. And so it like kind of rifles through all of these different ideas so fast. Here, it's just like, you know, it's fast in the sense that the tracks are short, but the tracks just are in the middle of some shift. And they were like, this was us, you know, sort of searching for something. And it's not that we necessarily found it, but it is like inspiring. And it is a kind of fun to listen to them just searching and exploring and like actually experimenting, like that listener just said.
Yeah, I think what you said, like it being a creative fun is a good description of it, you know, because you're right. I mean, there's songs like, you know, was it Full 3 on this record? You know, that's like a super like music concrete like sort of song. It's not like, yeah. it's not fun in the sense like, you know, you wouldn't want to play that at the club, I don't think, or anything,
right,
you know,
right.
But it is, it's like a, I think it's an interesting experiment, and it's a like, as a person who likes the like experimentation of Oddtekker and the like, you know, dicking around with audio stuff, like Full 3 is interesting in that sense, you know, like,
yeah, it's just cool that it's like you're hearing them experimenting, like you're mm-hmm. not hearing the final product,
yeah,
of
exactly
a bunch of experimentation. You are hearing them in real time experimenting, and that is like a kind of fun to me. And sticking with the topic of having fun, listener Joe writes, Oddtekker said in an interview that the word choristis is just made up, but it's always made me think of solstice, which happens both after a full revolution around the sun and just at a change of seasons. Choristis feels very much like the solstice in Oddtekker's career up to then. On one hand, they're back full circle to using a pretty much completely hardware only setup and making music that feels a lot like a hyper advanced version of Lego Feet. On the other hand, this feels like the beginning of the era that culminated with NTS Sessions a decade later. Joe also points out that Richard D. James had recently released his Analord series, and it seems like Oddtekker were inspired to do their first true acid music in ages. In fact, many critics, like the reviewer for Pitchfork and the reviewer for The Wire, note that there's some very clear acid, electro, etc. here. So do you hear Choristis as kind of nostalgic in that way, or as the start of something new?
You know, I didn't really think about it, but when he says, what did he say exactly about Lego Feet? You know, like it being like a hyper advanced like Lego Feet, it does like sort of feel like that. I really didn't think about it, but you know, it's like you can see those people like got so much better with their instruments and talent and everything, sort of, but making like that fun kind of thing again. So, I don't think it's like nostalgic in the sense that like, I think when you say like nostalgia, it's always like sort of backward looking. And I don't think Oddtekker like really ever do that. You know, they're very like forward moving, I think, as a group. But I mean, I think they're, you know, you could definitely like say that there's hints of that in there, you know, the acid and electro and everything. I guess that would be a nostalgia.
Yeah. I mean, it is just kind of striking to me. One of the most striking things about this album is the like number of songs where, and it's hard to like, you know, as you said, to like remember which one is exactly which, but you know, like Chank 9 comes to mind, but like it's just pure acid. Like it's just clearly, I mean, it's doing some interesting things with it, or like the 90101, et cetera, et cetera. Like these tracks are very acid, clearly. And I don't know, it's just sort of interesting that it's in there. There's some stuff that does feel very electro. And I don't know, I hesitate to like agree with a lot of these reviewers who say like, oh, they've, you know, they're looking back on all that they've accomplished 15 years later and stuff like that. I don't think it's exactly that, but it is just weird how, because normally I would be sort of annoyed if they were like doing these little like, here's our acid track, you know?
Yeah.
So why isn't that annoying?
I think because that this is that sort of White Album like approach, you know, you're not, if it was like, this is our acid album, you know, or
yeah,
or even maybe half the record was acid or looking back like that, that would be annoying. But it's the same thing, you know, I'll break the rule again, but you know, like in the future with like NTS, when there's just so much stuff, like, you know, people joke about like BQ, BQ, BQ or whatever, you know, it's like so silly, you know, but when it's one song out of, you know, 8 hours, it's like, you know, you don't mind it. And I feel like that's the same kind of thing here. When they're giving you so much stuff, you know, like we've got 20 tracks here, you know, pretty short links. Anything that's bad, you know, like, you know, I don't think, like I said, it's interesting, like full three, but you know, it's not like the song I want to listen to over and over again,
right.
But it's 3 minutes and 45 seconds in a 73-minute record. You know, it's fine. You know, yeah, I'll move on. Yeah. I'll listen to the, you know, in 3 minutes, I'll be on the next track in a different, you know, yeah. sort of world.
It's just sort of interesting how like if you think about the White Album, there are tracks that are just like, oh, they're doing a country thing or whatever. Like they're doing kind of a loungy,
Sinatra
exactly. style
exactly.
thing. And for some reason it doesn't detract. Like it just sort of, because it's all part of the mix, it's like, yeah, go ahead, follow those weird little detours, and it like kind of makes it exciting and does add to that fun quality we were talking about earlier. Before we move on, any quick thoughts on the context? You know, I didn't even realize like how close this is to the Analord series, which I kind of love, but that's like a very clear kind of looking back, sort of a nostalgic trip thing. So does it seem sort of like warp artists like Richard D. James and Autechre are sort of looking back a little bit while this new wave we talked about last episode is just starting up, people like Burial, Flying Lotus, The Field, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I think by this point, you know, like Richard D. James and Autechre are like the, you know, they're the old guys in the game, you know, they're the stalwarts
or
the founding fathers. Exactly. So I think it's like, I mean, obviously the Analord is like, I think an intentional, you know, look back kind of series. So I think it's easy to like say that with, you know, the legacy acts they've become, you know. I think it's just easy to like sort of see that in groups that have been around so long.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting because I feel like when I listen to Choristus, I feel like it kind of fits right in with this new wave of people like Burial and Flying Lotus and stuff. Like it's sort of a new creative thing, but it is simultaneously kind of similar to what Richard D. James is doing in this like kind of nostalgic, like just having fun. They're so good at it. They can just sort of have fun and show us the process. Let's move on to favorite tracks. What are, and I know it's kind of tricky, but do you have any like clear favorite tracks, standouts? You know, I like to quiz you, and I don't think it's going to be totally possible here, but let's just say that there are 1, 2, 3, 4 bolded tracks. Let's see if you can get one right.
I think maybe the PLC. I feel like that one's pretty banging. Is that one?
No, it is not bolded. Weirdly, I do feel like that is. Give it one more try.
I'll go Tank a Kern.
Yes, there you
nice,
go. Well
nice.
Done. Yeah, so it's actually, it's Plyphon. Sim, Tanka Kern, and No 2.
Okay.
Weirdly.
Yeah, that one's,
I feel like that's
strange.
A really weird assortment. What would you be bolding on,
you know,
this album?
I really like IO. You know, I've bitched in the past about audio, or like, you know, speaking samples in Autechre.
Yeah.
I think this is the best done one, at least up to this point. I really like it. It's so like, It's such a weird thing. It's like the most talking in an Autechre thing, but you can understand so little of it. It just like draws me in. Like I want to like figure out what it's talking about. You know, it just like, I don't know. It becomes like very interesting and like elusive. I thought it was like the one of the better, I mean, this whole record, anytime there is a vocal sample, I think it's much better done than on anything previously.
I
really like
it. Really
that
pops up in a couple times. I wanted to, one of my favorite tracks is WNSN, and for some reason I always think of that as like WNSN, the radio station where we just play garbled robotic vocals all day long. That's the radio interference you hear on the other songs.
Yeah, I like that. that song is good. I like the PLC quite a bit. You know, that is like such a fun track. Otherwise, yeah, it's pretty hard to remember which one's which, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, Rail, I love. I think that is like such a cool, like sort of slamming chug of a beat. I love Tanka Kern, like there's sort of this like repeating note. It's like so dreamy because it's just drenched in reverb, but it's just repeating. It makes you feel like the song is stuck, like the way that I can't remember now, the last track on Confield, like you feel like it gets stuck, like everything is just like looping and fucked up. It does that, and yet it is totally propulsive and like totally moving forward. It's like moving while stuck at the same time. But yeah, I mean, there's just like so many cool little highlights. On that note, though, we didn't get a ton of individual highlights from listeners, probably because it's so hard to pick them out. But listener Mike writes, there are two standout tracks, and I love all of the different iterations of them as well. They are the PLC and Chank 9. I believe these two tracks are the best arranged and perhaps show the most time spent with them. Listener Sean writes, I went from hating IO to it becoming one of my favorites on this album. Once you get past the carnival synth line that annoyed me in the first half, the track opens up into a glorious beat that's strictly for the freaks. Which I really like. We kind of talked about all these, I think. Another listener, actually, I wanted to bring up, who asked to remain anonymous, wrote in with an impassioned recommendation to check out Lucio Arresi's unofficial video for Plyphon, calling it even better than the Gantz Graph video. Did you get a chance to check that out, and what did you think?
Yeah, I watched it earlier today. I liked it. I mean, it is like... It seemed like a lot of work for being I assume the person did it for free, kind of thing. It does have like a similar sort of feel as the Gantz Graph video. You know, it's these like digital sort of things. We should link the video on Twitter so people can watch it. But it's these digital sort of things. You know, stuff's kind of popping up. On beat or on with rhythm and everything. But I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, I think it like apes the Gantz Graph video a little bit, but I for being an amateur production, I thought it was a lot better than I thought when I read your when you sent it to me and you said it was a fan video or whatever. I didn't have high expectations.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, yeah, it is clearly like kind of aping the Gantz Graph video, but it kind of takes it to a new level, I feel like, because the Gantz Graph video, and our listener sort of points all this out, but that like the camera is still, you're seeing the shape like exploding and stuff. This is like the camera is like moving across the surface of some weird image, and you're seeing like almost like nails and screws and stuff like pop up along with the beat. And I mostly wanted to bring this up because like Plyphon is a cool example of, there are a lot of tracks on this album that are just like pummeling, like the low end is just huge and just like relentless, it is just like pounding you in the face. Like Tankakern is the same way. I mean, I sort of love that dynamic. How like you get very dreamy, ambient, droney, and then all of a sudden there's like this huge low end just like pummeling you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think the low end on this record is one of the best things about it. And what you said earlier too about like Altabuzz like sort of being the the guide or the key to the record, showing you to point, pointing that kind of thing out is pretty cool.
Are there any weak points here? Things you really don't like?
I mean, yeah, there are. I think Steals is they're going experimental, which I normally like. I don't think it works all that great here. That track's just sort of boring. And I think even sort of Full 3. We'll get to it, but I kind of like some of the one of the other versions of it quite a bit better than the one here. Again, both of those tracks are only around 3 minutes each, so I don't think they derail the record too much, but I think they are sort of the boring ones here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there are tracks like Fold 3 that are, I would say, not like pleasant to listen to at all, really. It's just like whooshing sound and stuff like that, pretty chaotic. But because it's so short and it's just like in the mix, and then I also really like how the next track, FWZE, you can almost hear some of that whooshing like deep in the background, like as if
it's sort of, it's almost like it's an intro to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And even what's really crazy about this album, right? I mean, what's crazy about it is that like you get the sense that these were really long jams that have been edited down, and we don't know if like Full 3 could have actually been 10 minutes after FWZE, mm-hmm. and FWZE just slowly became like these whooshes overtook the whole thing, and they just wrote on that for a while or something like that. You know what I mean? Or they could have been like right after each other, or the other way around. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
So you hear a lot of like these same sounds sort of pop up, and we talked about how similar the palette is across this album, and many of these songs could have been within seconds of each other, like just in the like shift and the jam or something. And so even the bad songs, I kind of like listening to it and sort of thinking, oh, I can hear little pieces of where that came from. And they're not bad. They're just like sort of strange little pauses of like sound collage or drone, but they still are sort of cool. And like thinking about the process which is something we'll talk about more. I want to read a sort of hot take from listener Sean, who says, Choristis loses some points for me for having a weak ending. I appreciate the ambient bookends, but while I think Altibiz is a really strong ambient track, No 2 and Out H9X are both just all right for me, especially considering the amazing run of closing tracks up until this point. What do you think of that?
It's a hot take, I think. I like both of those songs. I think they're pretty good closers here. I really like how they bookend, you know, with Altibuzz. I like them. I'm gonna have to disagree with Sean.
Yeah, I mean, there's something weird about this album, but maybe fitting that, like, it doesn't really climax. You know, I don't think, like, if you consider these two tracks like the closing tracks, it's not like Chank 9 is such a great, like, climactic ending to the album or anything like that. It never really, like, hits that big thing and then we're in the kind of drone soundscape coda or anything mm-hmm. like that. It just sort of, like, eventually drifts into this. And so that's, like, can feel a little anticlimactic. But I love both of these tracks, especially the No 2 track, which just has, like, these weird, like, it feels like there are these lush, like, chords, but they're, like, popping in stages. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like, it should be a swell, but it's, like, designed to sort of be like, you know, like, it just, like, is, like, cutting, and it just feels so bizarre and, like, so disorienting. Absolutely love that. And then I do think the last track is, like, with these cool little bouncy, like, dripping bell, like, tabla type sounds in there. I mean, it's, like, such a zone out kind of thing. I think it's just so awesome, even if it isn't necessarily a great climax or something. Okay, so we've already talked about the sequencing and the big picture here plenty, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't spend just a second on the artwork. Choristis saw Autechre reunite with the Designers Republic after a 10-year break, and I highly recommend you all check out the little write-up on the Designers Republic website. But, you know, what do you think, Dan, about the Choristis art and just the overall aesthetic here?
You know, I like the artwork. It's a little strange. I think looking at the artwork without hearing the record first, you're thinking, oh, you know, this is going to be, you know, real digital. You know, we're getting digital here.
Yeah.
But it's like the least kind of digital record in a bit from them. So I don't know how well it, like, fits the album itself. But I do like the artwork, you know, on that Designers Republic website. You know, they said it's sort of based off, like, a Norton disc check program and like kind of you know, old computer manuals and all. And, you know, I do IT for a real job, so yeah, you know, I dig that kind of stuff. So it does, like, look really cool. I don't know that it fits the, like, sound of this record super well. I think it gives you sort of false hopes or whatever.
Yeah, huh. I mean, to me it feels like really appropriate. I mean, it's such a striking, like, pretty blue, and it really colors the record, no pun intended, for me, where, like, maybe I would think of it as sort of dark and, like, this weird creepy cavern, but for some reason I can't stop thinking about the artwork, and it makes me, you know, just associate it more with that kind of dreamy, like, floating you know, dream pop kind of, like, psychedelic style that we were talking about earlier. Like, I almost wonder if I would have that impression if I wasn't constantly thinking about, like, this really striking blue, striking for Autechre to use. And I do like the weird letters here, just that they're all, like, I mean, they're in order, but they look kind of like just a scrambled mess. It does mm-hmm. make me think of this record as, like, a just bunch of reassemblings of the same constituent parts, as we were saying. I feel like it's really appropriate, and to me, like, one of the most memorable AE artworks, period. So before we wrap up with this one, let's spend just a second on the lukewarm reception. We heard from a few tepid defenders these past 2 weeks, but for the most part, our listeners are not so hot on Choristis, I gotta say. I particularly like this email from Joe, who writes, "Whenever I'm in the middle of listening to the album, I always think to myself that this should be considered their seminal masterpiece and greatest achievement, but when I'm done, I don't have the feeling that I need to listen to it again, and I'll usually go at least another few months without listening, thinking I must have overrated it." So how do you explain the sort of lukewarm reception among fans, and, you know, how would you just sort of sum up your feelings? How did it go these past 2 weeks?
Oh, well, I'll start with summing up my feelings. I really like this record. You know, I said at the start that this was one that I always sort of, you know, I never really, like, dug deep into. But I came to like really, really, really like this album. Like I've wanted to constantly keep putting it on, and the whole cinematic universe or whatever. Like it was just like something that it was like so much fun digging into it and everything. It really like I don't understand the lukewarm reception. I honestly don't get it. Because like I said, I think it like really kind of foreshadows like NTS and stuff, which fans love. So I don't know. I really like I don't understand the lukewarm reception here.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it's absolutely weird and sounds like it should be terrible, because like I imagine, okay, what if the Grateful Dead, somebody was like, okay, we just listened to like all their jams and we took 3-minute segments of the best jams and put them together in a nice big mix. Like that would be the shittiest thing ever.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the point of that cool part in the jam if you don't hear how they arrive there? But weirdly, you know, it doesn't feel like these juggernaut jams. It feels like these concise little miniatures. And because I said, you know, I mentioned how they just sort of move from like one idea to the next. And like, that's what you're hearing is that like one little transition. It feels like such a tight focused idea and just like this cool glimpse into the experimentation, but it just like works as like this tightly constructed little miniature more often than not. I mean, I think it's I think a lot of people are just sort of like, okay, it's kind of a mess, and why would I want to hear 3-minute segments of a bunch of jams? You know, people like NTS because you get to hear the full thing.
Yeah,
which
true.
I get. But I feel like having spent so much time with it these past 2 weeks, I started to realize that it's not as much of a mess as I once thought. A lot of tracks, they kind of like move right into each other and you can like hear the relationship between them. There are some like sort of jarring transitions and stuff, but then they're usually fun because you start to hear the logic in that. I feel like you can always find the logic in the way it's sequenced. And I just love it. I mean, I think this is just such a like brilliant album.
There is like always like some sort of thread, I feel like. I mean, you mentioned the one example of Fall 3 and FWZE, like, you know, that whooshing is sort of like the thread between those songs. In fact, like one of the reasons I think that it was, I mean, the three reasons why it's so hard to remember the songs, there's so many of them, there's so many versions, and then I think like a lot of them like reuse like sort of sounds in that like kind of way, you know, like you'll hear little snippets and it kind of sometimes like makes it hard to remember where that snippet came from or whatever. I like really don't understand the mess quality of it, you know, once you dig deep into it. And maybe you gotta spend 2 weeks, you know, 2.5 weeks like really listening to it over and over and over again. But I think it's definitely a record that like rewards repeated listening, and there's so much to find in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're just getting started. We're about 1/4 of the way through.
Yeah, so, no, exactly. Yeah.
We ready to move on?
Yeah. All right. Well, Choristus dropped digitally on January 29th, 2008, but for the physical release on March 3rd, Warp announced a special 2-CD version of the album that was limited to just 1,000 copies and has never been repressed. That is, or repressed rather, known as Choristus Versions. This bonus disc contains alternate versions of 11 Choristus tracks. However, many of these tracks are pushing 10 minutes in length, making the bonus disc about as long as the original album.
Yeah, there isn't much to say about reception since the vast majority of people have probably never heard this, but I want to focus on how this might have started to shift people's understanding of the main album. It's funny because in a January 24th interview, Sean is asked if there are any plans to release an accompanying EP, and he says, this isn't it, but there's no EP. That's all I'm going to say at this point. So, this must have been a pretty big surprise then, and I'm wondering if you think the sound is noticeably different from the main album, if this disc has its own sound and identity, if it changes the way you listen to the main album, and et cetera, et cetera.
You know, I think, especially of all the, like, you know, it's confusing because this one we'll call versions, but Choristus, like, or Quadrange, like, contains versions of the other songs too. But I think of all those, this one is, like, sort of the most, this sounds like we're just sort of getting bigger glimpses of those jams. I think it sounds a lot like the original album, just opened up, you know, like a bigger, you know, if it's different dreams and you're opening the door, it's, you're maybe coming in the room a little earlier or staying a little longer for a lot of them.
Yeah, I think that's true. There are a couple of like ones that seem like pretty transformed here to me. Like the 90101 comes to mind, where it's like now a full blown like techno track somehow.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it does feel like sort of an extended look at, you know, a bigger clip of this jam, you know. And weirdly, though, I feel like it does sort of change the overall sound of the record in a way, because it's like a lot of times what we end up getting to spend more time on are the kind of weirder parts.
Yeah.
You know, like I think of like the PLC, LCPC. it's like, you know, you get like just a longer look at the kind of weird breakdown and collapse. And then like this new kind of cool, like bass groany melody starts to arise out of the mess and stuff. And I just feel like so many of his tracks are like that, where it's like what you get to see more of is the kind of mess rather than the really tight, concise change. Like you get to see more of like the wandering around in the dark, like not sure what shape this is going to take yet. And it makes the whole, if we can call this a record, versions, you know, feel like more, not in a bad way, but meandering and like wandering sort of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, you mean if you took this all in at once, you know, if you listen from All to Buzz all the way, you know, to No Four, is that how you mean it?
Well, I mean, like, just if you listen to this record, Chorus's versions, like, from
first
track
itself. Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. Okay, I get what you're saying. You know, it is, like, more meandering. I mean, here, like, the PLCP, whatever, it's 9 minutes and 20 seconds, whereas the, you know, the other version is basically half that. And I mean, same thing, you know, you know, everything is like, so much... you know, bigger and you're really sort of like meandering through and finding, like, you know, I feel like you can never like really tell, like, oh, you know, this 2 minutes is the 2 minutes they snipped out. You know, it doesn't feel like that. You know, it just feels like these are the jams that were then, like, you know, reworked to become the snippets that we heard in the original record.
I just felt like when you listen to like the PLC, LCPC, or you listen to like Chank 9-X here, they are longer, like much, much longer. And by the time they end, they are just a different song. You know, like, you know, when you listen to like AE Live, right? And fans will try to make like little cuts of like, if you want to divide it into tracks, you know, and it's like, it's pretty imperfect because it's really just more of a gradual shift. And it's like, I understand the desire to like figure out where it divvies out. And I do kind of wish Autechre like made some decision and like divided it into individual tracks so I could listen that way and like comprehend it better. But it doesn't really make sense because they're just in a constant state of change. And I feel like with these longer versions, you really hear that. So it's like by the end of Chank 9, you're in a completely different world. This could have become its own track on Choristus, you know, like totally could have. And so it just makes the album, if we think of this as an album, as I said, like just have a very different character in my mind. You know, it's like not the little sound worlds, little doors that go into different directions. It's more of just like these weird meandering explorations. You know what I'm saying?
No, I mean, like you said, when we were talking about the, you know, the main album, like, you know, Full 3 into the FWZE, like FWZE still has that like sort of, you know, noise or whooshing through it. And it's almost like, you know, maybe that's later in the jam and we haven't heard that yet. Yeah. You know, it like, this is what this record feels like. Cause you're right. You know, like PLCP, whatever, like becomes a whole different thing. So does, you know, Chank 9-X and everything. Like it's, we're getting to see, you know, little pieces like that could have been a whole another song, you know, just because something here is 8 minutes or whatever, you know, you could split that into 2 4-minute tracks, you know, like I think they've done in the original one. I mean, especially the versions it's not like a 1-for-1, you know, remake of the original record. You know, it's not, we're not getting 20 new tracks, you know, we're getting a little more than half, you know, so
but it's weird, right? Because it's like an abridged version of the album. Like it skips some, but it does go in the same order.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Kind of strange.
It is strange. I was thinking about that. You know, the first time I listened to it, you know, I didn't really, you know, I hadn't really like looked at the track list that hard. And I sort of, you know, as I was hearing it, I was sort of thinking like, oh, it is just, you know, a different version of every song. And then I, you know, kind of realized, oh, you know, the ones are missing here and stuff. But it is, yeah. So it is like really strange that they put it in order. So it is like to show you, you know, that these were, you know, the kind of jams,
right,
or something.
Right.
You know, like
yeah.
if it was just supposed to be like a different EP or album or something, like, I don't know that they would follow that same, you know, track listing.
Yeah, that's a good point. It actually is just like, it's almost like not meant to have its own identity. It's just meant to show you like a bigger glimpse or something. But it's interesting to me because I just feel like Choristus, like the identity of Choristus is the short track lengths. Like that's mm-hmm. what makes Choristus Choristus, yeah. is that we're like so quickly moving around through different worlds and ideas and iterations. So when you remove that part, it's such a different listening experience, I feel like, than the original album. You know, and then what do you make of the very different artwork here? It's like a gray metallic looking thing. And to me, like I couldn't tell if I was like being manipulated, because I told you I constantly think of that like weird deep blue color when I'm listening to Choristus. And then when I'm listening to this, I keep thinking of that like metallic gray. And I was thinking like, this sounds like darker and like more stark. And I was like, am I just thinking that? But then the more I thought about it, it was like, you know, this opening track, I can't even pronounce it, Altikyr, whatever, it's the Altibuzz of this album. It is a much starker version. It's like a little string composition that yeah. just has like a really melancholy kind of minor sound compared to Altibuzz. It like I almost don't even hear the relationship. But then when you get into the LCPC, you feel like the kind of lush chords that are underneath, if you try to follow that, like the lantern I was talking about before, it just sort of makes me feel like the record is a lot more grays and like darkness, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. I mean, maybe you're being a little, you know, manipulated by the
yeah.
cover. You know, I think like the actual, you know, physical thing, it's like, it's like laser cut of, like metal, like actual, you know, metal too. Right. That's what the, Designer Republic website said.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I like the blue, you know, sort of computery look much better.
Yeah.
This, I don't know. It seems, you know, it reminds me of, you know, when like DVDs were real big, which I guess was around 2008, and you know, Best yeah. Buy or somebody would have like a special edition. It was the Steelbook, you know, of
yeah.
of a thing. It's sort of like reminds me of that, which I kind of think is like a real middle 2000s kind of corny
True.
Little, you know, bonus, you know, thing, because it was at that period where like people were stopping purchasing of like physical things, you know, like
right,
digital
right.
downloads were becoming like, you know, much more prevalent, and it was like it always just sort of felt like the last kind of grasp of you know, like record labels and movies and stuff, like, you know, trying to get people to be like, oh, collect these things.
Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
collector's sort of thing. And, you know, I think even like a quite a bit of like albums of this time like had a, you know, either a bonus disc or a bonus song at a store or some, you know, or a bonus kind of packaging. And so I think it sort of falls into that a little bit. It's kind of a product of its time, and looking
yeah,
back a little corny.
That. Yeah, I mean, to me, I just think it's significant that like I know that for the most part, these are just sort of extended versions of the stuff that's on Choristus, but I can't help but feel like this release has a very different character. You know, the character has changed because of the extension, because of like some of the darker, like starker areas like the intro track, and because of the album art, which is like, you know, it just sort of seems like the whole character sort of changes when you make these slight shifts. This might be a good time, though, to get into the big Choristus question, though I know we'll circle back to it in a little bit. Listener Mike says the main albums present, quote, short stubs, and then they went on to further develop each stub. Listener Jeff describes this bonus disc as fleshed out versions of the original tracks, in contrast to the Quadrange EP, which is mostly reworkings, according to him. He adds that much of Versions presents better cuts of these tracks, but it's also missing some of the best tracks from Choristus proper. Listener Joe, on the other hand, argues that the EPs are just extras, like Bob Dylan's bootleg series. And listener Wendell similarly stresses that, quote, the companion companion EPs are not extended remixes of the album tracks. The proper album tracks are heavily edited down segments of longer jams, and these jams were eventually released as these EPs. So which is it? You know, like, what is the Virgin's bonus disc really?
I think the, like, the allusion to, you know, Bob Dylan's bootleg series thing is pretty apt, especially with Versions, you know, because it's a thing. They only made 1,000 of these, you know, it's for the fan. That bootleg series, if people aren't, like, familiar, there's always, like, a version of it that's, you know, scaled down. It's just, you know, some stuff, you know, a scaled down, you know, compilation, and then there's, like, the you know, the bonus one for the big fans. It'll be everything, you know, he recorded in a certain year or time period or for a record or whatever. And that's sort of what, like, Versions you know, almost feels like, especially with the, like, limitedness of it and everything. But I also like the Mike, where he said that it's quad range and stuff is kind of almost like more reworkings, and this is you know, more like remixes or whatever. I sort of agree with that, at least in part. What about you?
Yeah, it's confusing because it's like, I agree with Wendell. Wendell's right. I think that Choristus is the end product here. It's,
yeah,
like the final
definitely.
Thing, and it's important to remember that. But at the same time, I feel like everything we're hearing is contemporaneous. Like, it's not like, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, they made, like, Quad Range after
Choristus. Yeah,
like, it all,
yeah,
it all comes out of the same sessions. It's different pieces, it's different, like, edits and stuff like that. But, you know, it's just, like, hard to, I feel like it's essential. It's something I feel like we'll return to, but it's just essential to remember that, like, there isn't a hierarchy here. Like, I feel like I sort of disagree with some of the listeners that, like, you know, like, the main album is, like, the proper one and everything else is just extras. Like, this is just one huge session, right? And maybe the original album is, like, the most meticulously edited and sequenced and stuff like that, but they all kind of exist at the same time. It's just, like, more looks at the same moment in time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right about, like, the hierarchy, you know, like, Choristus is, like, the album. You know, and I think, like, we go through a level of, like, how big of a fan are you? You know, like, I think the huge fan would hunt down something that's only, you know, 1,000 copies. Whereas, like, maybe Quad Range is a little more, you know, available. It's still not on, like, Spotify or anything. You know, you still kind of got to dig for it, but it's easier to find. The digital exclusive, you know, that was only for Japan. But it's still, you know, I mean, you could find it. It's not difficult to hunt down, you know. And I think it's sort of that, which like he said with the bootleg series, like, it's sort of that same thing, you know. There's people who just like, you know, Bob Dylan's albums. There's people who maybe, you know, like a live album or two, you know. And then there's this bootleg series that's for the, you know, the super fan kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just don't know. I hope that by the end of this conversation, I have come to a conclusion, but I just feel like sort of torn because it's like, I don't really like thinking of any of these as like derivatives of each other. It's like all the same sessions, all the same creative process. And yes, like the album is the main thing to hear, like the thing that they really wanted to present, the thing that is most easy to access, obviously. But it's like, they are, you know, if we shift our thinking of Choristus, not just as an album, but as like a year of productivity or something like that, or a couple of years, like it's all one big creative explosion, then there is no hierarchy. But we can come back to that. For now, let's just keep it moving. You know, how would you summarize your thoughts about the Virgin's disc? Are there any highlights, or do you love this? Do you just think it's okay, or what?
You know, I kind of just think it's okay. This I'll say of all the Choristus universe, I think this is my least favorite. It's the one I like wanted to listen to the least throughout the 2 weeks. I just feel like a lot of it is kind of still similar to the original album, you know, of course, like expanded, we go into different places, but I feel like the original album for the most part is still kind of lurking in the shadows here, making it not different enough. And in fact, I think one of the highlights for it on this record for me was Io Mons. You know, I said, yeah, I really liked the, you know, the original track. I really like the version that's here, but that's also on the digital exclusive EP, I think, in a sort of better packaging of it. I liked the full four here better than full three. I think it's more interesting. And I think, really? I think, like, with Music Concrete and just like experimental music in general, I think a lot of times, like, if you make it long and just like really commit to it, it makes it better. And so I just think like that works better in a nearly 12 minute piece than it does a 3 minute. I wouldn't want full four to be on the main album, yeah, because right. I think it would fuck up the flow. But I think as a piece, like I enjoy this one more. In fact, I honestly would kind of make it a highlight of versions, whereas full three, I you know, make a low light of Choristus, actually.
That's interesting. I feel like full four, I'm just like completely bored after a few minutes. I'm like, my God, you know, it's cool to hear, but
you know, you remember my love of a Phil Nye block. So I can deal.
Yeah, I just feel like because you've removed like the most defining characteristics of Choristus, like I was saying, like change the character so much, like this record, the character is different, but it just doesn't have such a like clear identity, like something that makes it striking and interesting on its own. It's probably not meant to be really considered as its own thing, but if it was, you know, I feel like it would be the worst Autechre album, period, whereas I don't feel that way at all about the original album. But all right, we're ready to move on to the digital exclusive EP.
Yeah. On April 23rd, 2008, Autechre released the three-track digital exclusive EP only on the Japanese iTunes store. The first track, Io Mons, is identical to the track on Versions, minus a 12-second coda, but the other tracks represent new versions of the two Choristus tracks.
Yeah, so I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on this one, but I do want to use this opportunity to tackle another big question. We've talked about how so many Autechre releases seem to be celebrations or maybe interrogations of the medium. Earlier, we read Joe's theory that Choristus is a celebration of the mixtape medium, but listener Jordan calls it, quote, their digital downloads and portable music album. It would explain the more casual, less serious sound and shorter track lengths, as they would be easier to get into rather than long-winded, slow-burning tracks that require more concentration, like on previous albums. You mentioned this, but indeed, by 2008, we had firmly entered the iTunes era and the file sharing era, as you were saying. I mean, I'm sure that every big fan had this as soon as they wanted it, even though they were pretty exclusive releases. But, you know, I wonder if the digital exclusive EP makes you think about the Choristus project like as an exploration of the digital format a little bit.
I think it's like the first like little glimpse at it. You know, they haven't like fully committed, you know. I mean, obviously like Choristus, like the main album is a CD, you know, Versions is like a bonus CD, but you know, they're inking into it with things like this digital exclusive EP, which I think, you know, like they're really forerunners of it. And you know, today they've released like LSEC and NTS, which I think are like such absolute like celebrations of the digital format and like not having to be, you know, stricken to any sort of like medium or you know, links or any length of right. You know, formats, even though NTS is on vinyl. But I read, I can't remember if it was Sean or Rob, but one of them in one of these 8 million interviews I read, he said that like the wave file is the like album. And you know, and that's interesting, because I think, you know, in 2008, like for someone to say like, oh, the download is the like is the right, that is like, I mean, they're a good 5-10 years like ahead of everyone else in that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of gets at what you know, listener Joe was saying earlier, like, perfectly, in the sense that, like, it is looking back to the mixtape era, but it is simultaneously looking forward to the, you know, digital downloads era. And it might even be that they recognized how similar this new era was to the era that they grew up on, you know, making mixtapes.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff. It's just like making playlists. So I do feel like just the existence of this, it just doesn't feel like a very Autechre thing to do, to be like, let's release this iTunes exclusive, you know, and it's just for Japan, obviously, but it's like, you know, which is common. They always do Japanese bonus tracks and everything. But just the idea that they went out of their way to make it an iTunes exclusive just feels like they were kind of interested in the way that listening habits were changing, and that this album might, this whole project might be a little bit of a interrogation of how things, you know, how music used to be, how it's becoming, and how similar those two things are. I feel like it sort of exists in both at the same time. You know, I think we'd also be remiss if we didn't discuss just for a second the last track here, Blizz Castle. Listener Jeff and Sean both wrote in to call this a hidden gem and a highlight of the whole Choristus era. What did you think of that? Were there any others that you really loved here?
Yeah, I think they're right. I mean, that song is like really good. It's almost like a shame that it's stuck on this, you know, digital exclusive EP that's, you know, a little difficult to find or whatever. That song is really great. I mentioned I really like Io Mons on Versions. I think it's you know, here you just got three tracks. I think all three tracks are really good. It's just
really high energy all the way through.
Yeah, I think like it just works better like in this short little package. So I really like it stuck here. But I think Blizz Castle is the highlight on this record, and I would agree. I think it's a highlight of the entire, you know, Choristus universe.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Actually, I mean, I feel like Io Mons, it's like, I had gotten enough of it on the Versions, so it was like a little bit of an annoyance whenever I would listen to this. And then I've got more than enough fucking 90101s, to be honest. Like, there are more than enough of those across this whole project, so I was a little bit turned off on that too. But like, the Blizz Castle is like, I feel like the worth the price of admission here. It's funny because the original song, BNC Castle, is in my opinion the weirdest thing on Choristus, on the original album. It's like really dry. It's like the only song with like no reverb. It's got kind of a blown out, like, weird feel. It really reminds me of Untilted because everything is like so crisp, and like it almost feels like a like hyperspeed joke song. Like, it's quite silly, like just like blipping and blooping and all this stuff. And then they like choristize it for this new version on the digital exclusive EP. Like, it actually does become really lush and huge and like totally changed, but just absolutely amazing. I feel like they should have just put this on here instead of the original track on the original album.
Yeah, I agree. I would switch the two if I was president of Autechre.
All right. We ready to move on to the Quadrain GP?
Yeah. If there was any question that Autechre had a Versions mentality when making Choristus, the project concluded with the May release of the Choristus Quadrange EP, 2.5 hours of alternate versions released one track at a time over the course of the month. That gave listeners even more insight into the process. At this point, it was the longest AE release by far, and even though it's technically a collection of four shorter EPs, the last disc contains a single hour-long track, Perlent's Subrange Range 636, the longest AE track ever. In regard to reception, Quadrange is pretty beloved at a 3.53 average on Rate Your Music. It's one of Autechre's highest rated EPs there.
Yeah, so I want to start with the same question I asked about Versions. Do you think the Quadrange EP has its own sound, its own identity, distinct from the main album?
Yeah, I think this one does more than Versions. You know, this is like, just with sheer length and monolithic like power.
Yeah.
This becomes, I mean, I to the cover, you know, is just blank gray. I think, which, like, you know, you were saying how you were getting you know, maybe a little pushed into your thoughts with the gray, you know, metal of Versions. I think you know, maybe I'm doing that here with just the blank gray. There's no writing or anything on this. It just it just is monolithic, which I think this is the monolithic version of Choristus right here.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, weirdly, I've seen I struggled to find this. I read on Wikipedia that there's like different art for each track, you know, because it was released day at a time, and I could not find the original. But I've seen, like, you know, there's a gray box with a black border. There is a black box with a gray border. So I'm assuming it's just like different variations of this kind of, yeah, grays and blacks and stuff throughout. Yeah, and to me, you know, you've seen that I am susceptible to being manipulated by cover art, but to me, I feel like that is very fitting for the very different identity of this album. Like, I wouldn't use the word lush, really, to describe this at all, and I wouldn't use, like, the pummeling, like, frenetic quality of a lot of the tracks, like the bouncing and the bubbling that comes up on the main chorus this album a lot. It has, like, a pretty mellow, kind of brooding vibe. I feel like it's... there's a lot of like hiss and static, mm-hmm. like particularly like the first track, the PLC CCC has like, you know, like this kind of hissing is like woven into it. And it just has this very minimalist, actually much more of like a looping quality, you know? And then I feel like as it moves on, it's not like a strictly linear thing, but as the album goes on, it starts to get like dronier and dronier, like to the point where you get to like, I mean, we got a bunch of purlences on this album, right? And like the last one, Purlence Iosid 2, is like just completely submerged in darkness. Like it is just a totally like low end, just murk, like drone affair, pretty much. Like you can still hear the remnants and stuff like that, but it's just like, you know, it just feels like from the very start of this record, we are in like a much more toned down, kind of like dry, weird area. And it's like just immediately on its way to Purlin Subrange 636.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like going to become drone, and it sort of does that gradually.
Yeah, exactly. This is the late night choristus, you know, like and in fact, like, you know, I'd listened to this record, like, you know, just laying down reading and stuff through much of the 2 weeks that we were preparing for this podcast, because it really has that, like, you know, late night chilled out, you know, what's that, lo-fi beats to beat, whatever. I'm too old. But another thing I really like about this is that it doesn't do what Versions does, where Versions is like in order of, you know, while it skips some of the track, it's here, we're not doing that. You know, I mean, like you said, we've got a 100 different purlences and stuff. It like, I think it's much more like sequenced and more, almost like more of a like different project, even though it's like very clearly like from that same you know, equipment and world and temporally, like you know, of Choristus. It doesn't feel like, oh, these are just, you know, different snapshots of it or something. Like it like feels like a whole different mood with that same material.
Yeah, I feel like if this whole period is just different sections of all the jamming they were doing in this period, it's like these were the jams, like you said, that they did like really late at night. Like these are like 3 or 4 in the morning, mm-hmm. like the stuff that they came up with, which is pretty distinct, I feel like, from the main album and from the Versions. And honestly, as you were saying, like there is like a logic to the sequencing here, which is all its own. And, you know, I tried putting, like, I made a little playlist of, you know, where it's like the album, but I just put all the Versions after whenever the first, you know, the song first appears, you know what I mean? So it kind of like plays like a Bob Dylan bootleg series or something like that. And it's just interesting because if you listen to it that way, you'll hear that like the 901s and the Purlences, you know, they kind of do gradually, like by the time you reach this, each one is just getting like darker and darker and dronier. And it just feels like this whole thing is on a course to arrive somewhere. So I feel like that's what makes it so much more successful than Versions. It has its own identity, and it is like a genuinely new arrangement of the constituent parts here. We've got to talk about Purlin's Subrange. You know, listener Joe writes, I can't wait to hear what you and other listeners say about Subrange. It might be the single most divisive track in their entire discography. I've heard people who think it was just a cynical money grab by them, but I've heard others who think it's an ambient masterpiece. So what do you think of this hour-long track?
I love it, but I mean, that's up my alley. You know, I love a good hour long, very minimalist, very ambient. I mean, it's essentially just like a 30-second loop over and over for 58 minutes. But I'm there for it. I like it. I listened just to that track, you know, going to bed, many nights over this past 2 weeks and stuff. I'm here for it. I love it. I think it's my, you know, favorite on this record, actually.
Wow. Well, you know, I can't say I agree. I feel like I like it as an idea, obviously. I mean, it's cool that the whole track feels like, I mean, because this feels like the, you know, like the what do they call that, black hole, or like the dark star that everything is getting sucked into as you listen to this album, like just over the course of it. And so I love that it exists. It serves like this great purpose, but I don't really like listening to it that much. I mean, it does sort of like change. I feel like it just gets more minimal over the course of the hour. You know, there's like kind of these like little bubbling, dripping, clanky sounds kind of like echoing in this drone, and they just sort of like get more distant from each other and just more sparse, and it just becomes like basically pure drone. You know, I don't think it's a cash grab or anything like that. But you know, like, here's a bit of trivia, right? So in the 2013 Ask Autech or Anything, Sean says that kind of happened because the loop had already been going for hours, and just as a kind of ambient relaxation thing, and we decided to capture it for a bit. That happens a fair bit, to be honest. I might do a 5 BPM mix of a track just for myself, or set it off running and just leave it on for a bit while I do stuff. So, I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, it sounds like that's what it is, right? That it was like for his personal use, he made like a very slowed down version of some like little piece of the Perlins track and just decided to record an hour of it and release it. I mean, does that make you think of it as like something like sort of lazy or like a bonus kind of afterthought thing?
No, I mean, because there's a time and a place for those kind of things. I mean, I really enjoy like ambient music and drone and everything, and so I don't think just because you could put a loop on and it can go for an hour without, you know, touching it, I don't think that's lazy or anything. It just means like, I mean, basically this song, they just happen to, you know, give you 58 minutes of it. It could be 100 hours of it, you know, or infinity, right? You know, it's just like that snapshot. And I think like you say, you, it's easy to say like, well then, you know, why give an hour? You know, it's such like a ridiculous like amount of time. I think that's because like drone and everything, and like I said with Full 3 and 4, like I think that those kind of things, like, they work best in these huge like monolithic chunks. So I feel like an hour is like is just a great amount of time for that, you know. If they just gave you this little loop and it went for 5 minutes, I don't think I would like it nearly as much as it going for 58 minutes, you know. Maybe that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, you know, to people, but I think it just like it gets you in that like sort of, you know, trance or you know, relaxation, yeah, kind of thing. And you need the time, you need time to like get into it and then time to like stay in it. And you know, and if it was only 5 minutes or 10 minutes, I think it's harder to like, you know, get there. Like I said, I listen to music every night, like when I go to sleep, and mostly ambient or drone kind of things, but you know, not always. But I mean, like I said, like with this one, it's perfect. You know, if it takes you 5 minutes to fall asleep, if it takes you 20 minutes to fall asleep, like, yeah, you're not missing out.
This is what's like weird about
anything.
It, right? Clearly, based on his description of this, it has like a functional purpose for him, that he does this sometimes. Like, I feel like it's so funny to imagine like a, you know, like if he just does, like he made a 5 BPM version of like LCC or something and just like had it playing while he was like cleaning up his office or something like that, right? So it sounds like this is something he does maybe as he's trying to go to sleep or whatever, you know, maybe he just likes to do this, right? So it's just weird that it has a functional purpose for him and yet it's been released as like this hour-long like juggernaut. You know, people are going to think of it like this masterpiece and discuss like, does it achieve the status of masterpiece, when the whole original idea was like a chill out.
Well, I think that's okay. You know, I mean, if it was on Choristus, you know, the album, then it would be like, maybe like, oh, you know, is this, you know, some genius masterpiece. So, but it's stuck here on an EP that's you know, extra, you know, kind of things. I don't think they're saying like, you know, were some geniuses that made a 58 minute thing. I think he's just sharing you know, if he makes those for himself, I think he's just sharing one. You know what it reminds me of? What's that Manuel Gotching record, like E2? You know what I mean?
E2, E4.
Yeah, exactly. It was like him, like literally recording something for himself to listen to on a plane ride. And they just happened to release it. You know, I think it's like okay to share those, that kind of thing. Yeah. You know, I mean, because if you don't want to listen to Perlant Subrange for an hour, it's the last song on this EP. Don't listen to it, or listen to it for as long as you want and turn it off. You know, it's not on the album proper. This is like something you had to be a fan to hunt down.
I just feel like I've probably listened to it in full like twice in my life. And I expect I'll get to like three times before I'm dead. You know, like I just have no intention of ever listening to this whole thing. So
yeah, I listen to it. Every time I listen to this record, I listen to the whole thing every time.
Oh my God.
I really did.
I love the idea. You know, it reminds me of like the last track on Neutral Milk Hotel's On Avery Island. You know, like I don't need to listen to that whole thing.
Pre-Sisters,
I love that it just explodes into this crazy drone and then sort of like dissipates slowly. I get the idea after 3 minutes and I love it, but it's like, I don't need to finish it. I'll leave, you know, but like, so I like it in that sense. You know, maybe you could just sum up your feelings on Quadrange as a whole. I feel like I've already got a pretty good idea. And then we can start talking about closing with some of those big picture issues. So how do you feel about Quadrange?
I think Quadrange is one of the best EPs so far, especially like in regards of being like a piece that goes with the record. You know, like some of the ones you know we've listened to before, it's just like a little mini step between, you know, what album was before it and the next album. I feel like this is a companion piece to Choristus. I mean, obvious, you know, with the names and everything, but it's like such a great companion piece. It gives you like that record again in a different mood, in a different light. It's like so awesome to hear like the process they go through and how like they can really take like what's essentially the, you know, quote unquote same song and make it like something really so different. I think I almost like enjoyed listening to Quadrange like more than I did the actual, you know, Choristus.
Wow.
Whereas like versions, I kind of always had to like force myself, like we're gonna talk about, you know, I gotta listen to it. Whereas I think like on my own, I probably just would have popped it on once or twice just to hear it and, you know, whatever. Whereas like Quadrange, I like wanted to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, I feel the way about this that I do about Perlant's Subrange. Like I love the idea of it, even if I don't like actually love listening to it as much. You know, I mean, it does feel like a true companion piece, as you said, which I love that it exists because it makes me think about the original album in a different way, and the original album makes me think about this album in a different way. It does have a very clear identity, which is something I was missing from the versions, that like gives us a reason to exist. Like I'm glad that this exists, but you know, if I'm being honest, like I don't need all of these 90 101s, like I really just don't. And you know, the like, you know, it's just nitpicking, but like the no 2-2 here, it's like if I had to pick, I feel like the no, I can't remember which one is which, but the one on versions, no 4 is like this the best version of that track out of all of them. And it's just like, you know, by the time I get to this one, I've heard two other versions of a very similar sounding thing. You know what I mean? It's like, so it's like when I break it down, I'm just like, okay, I don't love every second of this. And there's just stuff that's just kind of like, you know, interlude-y or whatever, stuff that's sort of repetitive from previous stuff. But I like that the whole thing is moving in a consistent direction and has a very clear identity. I mean, I feel like that makes it cool in principle, if not necessarily in listening. At this point, though, I think we can start circling back to some of those bigger questions we touched on earlier. Listener Mike compared the open look at process here to that on Draft 730, and listener Joe describes Choristus as an attempt to solve the draft problem. In other words, deciding when to stop in the creative process by just releasing everything. So I wanted to bring this up because it's like, do you feel like we complained about this very thing on the draft episode? Do you feel like this approach, just giving us everything, fixes the draft problem? Is this project a more interesting and successful interrogation of the process of creation?
I think it's definitely a more interesting interrogation of it because, you know, you get to like with draft, you don't get to hear that process in the sense like, you know, you never hear draft, you know, 6:30 or whatever. I don't know if it like completely solves it because I think your average listener is only ever going to really hear Choristus, like the album. I think it really like even sort of foreshadows like in the digital age, like with Spotify and everything, you know, like Kanye's done, like like changing albums after they've already been released, like with Life of Pablo and stuff. It almost like feels like that. It's like the process like doesn't really have to end, you know what I mean? It did at some point with Choristus because, you know, we're still in 2008 and, you know, things are still being released, you know, physically and everything. But I think it's just like really like forward thinking and forward looking like to the like such digital world, you know, that we now inhabit.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like, I really want to bring this up because I don't want people to think I'm a hypocrite because I criticize draft for this very thing. But to me, the difference really is that like one draft, like you said, just gives us one draft of everything. The other problem is that like every track on draft is pretty distinct. Like they talked about how they were completely planned and mapped out, you know, note by note. Right. And it's like, I feel like the drafts of the album was just different drafts of all these different songs. What's profound about Choristus is that on the original album, as we were saying, every track is already a reassembling of all the same component parts, right? So every new track is like some interesting reassembling, an interesting look at process. Like I feel like you would think about the process a little bit, even if you'd never heard any of the other releases that come along with this, right? But then on top of that, you get all these other looks at the process. And it's just so like open about the process. It is just such a more like way more successful, I think, like art project about the process of creation, because it just shows about the process of experimentation, really, because it just shows every different direction this could have gone. And you can like go as deep as you want. But no matter what little part you pick, you're going to be thinking about that. Whereas with draft, I feel like you don't really think about it as much as you like. You see the title and then you're like, the parts that suck, like the best way to explain it is to be like, well, I guess they didn't really finish it because they didn't know how, you know, like you use it as an excuse rather than like the most interesting thesis of the project. So another question, listener Jeff notes that many fans see the deluge of versions here as, quote, a big plus as it allows them to pick and choose the versions of songs they like most and, quote, build their own album. Indeed, when asked if he has his own Choristus era playlist, Rob said, well, no, not really. We made it so you could all do that instead of us. So what do you think about doing this? You know, is it essential to understanding the whole era to like build your own favorite version? What about listening on shuffle?
You know, I've mentioned it before. I'm a dinosaur when it comes to like music. I listen to albums. I like, my wife hates it. I won't even let her like skip a song on a record in the car and stuff. Like I'm very much in the mindset of like what was released. Like that's what they want you to, you know, you don't, I always say you don't skip a part of a movie you don't like, you know, you just sit through it and get to the next part of the movie. But again, I think that this is like very forward looking because, you know, kids, the millennials today, whatever, zoomers, they're you know, like it's a much more like playlist oriented world and stuff. Like Spotify, I think, like wants you to be a playlist kind of person more than an album kind of person. And so I mean, 2008 we weren't there yet. I mean, there was a little bit of it in the sense that, like, you know, you would burn CDs and maybe, you know, you would make a playlist or something. But, it, you know, it was still like, I think more often than not, people were putting a whole record on a, you know, on a CD. So I think it's super, you know, forward looking. And I mean, it's a cool idea. I kind of like the artist to tell me, you know, this is what I want. But they still kind of do it because, you know, I think Quad Range is like sequenced well. I think, you know, even, I mean, Versions just follows the sequencing of Choristus. But, you know, like I think even the packaging of, you know, digital exclusive, like only being three songs, like I think it like fits well in these like little packages on their own. But then if you want to do the whole playlist thing, you can also do that. But also what's strange is none of these except for Choristus are on Spotify. So it's actually hard to make a playlist of them.
Sort of defeats it. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like I feel like the Choristus album is so perfectly sequenced, as we were saying earlier, that I'm not really going to mess with it. I'm not really ever going to think of it as like just being free from prescripted order, you know, like
same.
That's the right order. But I do think it's kind of fun to mix things around. You know, I see people say like, oh, they like the PLC LCP from Versions more than the PLC because you get that cool end part. And, you know, that's like one example of like they would pick that version. They would exchange it for the one and on the album. To me, like doing a 9-minute jam in the middle of Choristus is going to like radically change things. But it is sort of fun that you can do that, that you can play around with it. And I did find myself like I made a playlist and I like listened to it on shuffle some just to see what stuff would, you know, what different meanings and stuff would emerge or different vibes. And like I told you, I made that playlist of like every version of the track right after each other. And you know, stuff like that. It was sort of fun to do, even though I don't think I'll ever forget about the perfect sequencing of the original album. Another interesting comment from Jeff, who says, and we talked about this a little bit, but he said, I'm overjoyed that across all three releases, I get multiple versions of Altabiz, the PLC, IO, Plyphon, and Tankekern. However, there is no alternate version of Rail. Meanwhile, we get at least 5 different reworkings of Perlance and at least 6 different reworkings of 90101. The second of those two is one I enjoy, but seriously, 6 versions of that and not a single alternative cut of Rail. What do you think about the uneven focus of versioning, you know, some tracks over others across all these releases?
I don't know this, but I it just makes me feel like maybe Rail, either like maybe it's just sort of part of one of these other jams, and so there is sort of no other, you know, version, or maybe it's just like a song that kind of came out, you're perfectly formed. I'm sure that happens, you know, sometimes like there maybe only is one version of Rail, you know, I think it's possible, or maybe they just think all the other versions of it suck, or maybe they're not different enough to, require releasing. I think there's gotta be a reason, because I mean, like you said, you know, if you're going to release 6 different 901s and, you know, and everything, like it would be odd to not do any of Rail. Like I feel like there's got to be a reason.
Yeah, I feel like it's actually probably exactly right that like Rail was a little transitional thing that just happened once in the process of their jamming, whereas other tracks they probably, you know, they probably sat down for the day and they were like, let's start up that 901 thing and see where that goes today, you know, like that. Like some of these were clearly like sort of the starting points or something that where they kept riffing off and branching off, and I think that's why there are so many different versions of it, you know. And it's interesting because like we were talking about like the PLC has like that neat little end part on the Versions version, and that is like the part that becomes the main focus sort of the Quadrange version, right? So it just feels like that's a clear example of like, well, we didn't use that, or you know, we may not end up using that or whatever, so let's just start there and see what we can do with that thing, you know. And like some tracks were just like sort of a improvisational miracle or something. It just happened one time and that's all we've got. I feel like that makes a lot of sense. Last one from listener Joe, who says, if I ever had the opportunity to ask Autechre a question, I would love to know that if they were to do Choristus over again, if they might have done an XI, LSEC, or NTS style longer release. What do you think of that? You think that they would have done that if they had this idea a little later, you know, just like put everything out on some juggernaut of a thing and that would be the album?
Maybe, you know, I sort of touched on it a little bit. I think it does like foreshadow a little bit like NTS or LSEC or something, like these data dump kind of things. But I don't know, because like, you know, NTS, it's not like we're not getting the same, you know, just 8 hours of the same, you know, versions of an hour's worth of songs or something. Like it's, you know, it's pretty different. You know, I some things, you know, repeat or whatever, but I don't know that it would be that, and I don't think it would be as good, you know, if we took all 5.5 hours of this and said that is the album, you know, I don't think it would be as good of an album. as having like this. It's nice to have that prescribed version of the record, and then you know you can dive as deep as you want outside of that.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think that makes it very different from NTS and very unique in their discography, actually, although I do feel like the idea for NTS starts here. All right, let's move on to wrapping up. This is a little long, not as long as I feared, talking about four releases,
yeah,
but
I know.
Still pretty long. So the big question I have is, how the hell do you want to rank this album? Do you think the releases even can be separated, or should the word like Choristus just mean the entire era, the entire project?
I mean, it is really hard. And I mean, we talked about it off air a little bit and stuff. It really is difficult because it's hard to separate them all, because it is like kind of the same. It's the same like work, just in different forms. And so to say like this form is much better than that form is like kind of a difficult thing to do. But I think I would rank like the album, like just the album Choristus and just the EP like Quad Range pretty high on my list. But, you know, if I have to include versions in there, I think it knocks it down a little bit, because I don't love versions. I think versions, it like really sounds like bonus tracks, which I mean, it essentially is, which I think like drags it down a little bit. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about this a lot. I feel like the problem with this is that like, if Choristus didn't exist, I don't think Quadrange would be nearly as interesting as it is. You know, like the whole idea of Quadrange is what it is, and that it's like the companion piece, like the nighttime version, as you were saying, and that it's all moving into this like drone territory or something. And it's just impossible, I think, to listen to Quadrange without thinking about
the context.
Choristus.
That's true.
And the same goes for Choristus. Like, I can't listen to it in a vacuum without thinking about the like main driving force behind the whole project being all these different versions. And so it's like, you know, I mean, I feel like this is weird to say, but like when I listen to the PLC, I think about that cool end part that's on the versions version, even though it's not there, it's still influencing the way I feel about the track. So I sort of just decided, like, basically what I want to say is I'm going to rank the whole project as one thing. But I want to ask the listeners what you guys think. Like, tell us what you would do in this case. Rank everything separately. Rank just Choristus and Quadrange separately. What would you do? Gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Let us know how you rank this project. But where did you decide to rank it? If you did, you know, come to your own conclusion.
Yeah, I ranked it as a project. And I'll leave it that way, unless listeners, you know, think we should do otherwise. But I put it pretty high. I put it at number five as a total.
Wow. Under what?
Under right under Amber and right above Confield.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. So what's your top 10 right now?
10 is Sickly Sweet, Garbage, Incunabula, EP7, Confield, Choristus, Amber, LP5, Chiastic Slide, and then Tri-Repete.
Wow. Well, I too put it at number five, actually.
Oh, weird.
But for me, it's right under Untilted, which I love and you do not. So my top 10 is Incunabula at 10, LP5, Gantz Graph, Sickly Sweet, Amber, Choristus, Untilted, Confield, Chiastic Slide, and then Tri-Repete at the top. So I want to ask how you would just sort of summarize your thoughts on this whole era. Any closing thoughts on this chapter of the journey? I mean, it seems like we were both kind of bowled over with this album, with this project.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this was an album before these 2 weeks I would have said I liked. And I think I would have even said I liked Quad Range. And now, after the 2 weeks, I definitely would say I love them. It was like a lot of fun, like digging into all this, especially like having these versions and getting to think about the process and everything. I really don't understand why it's so lowly rated. You know, I honestly, I would like people who hate this record to write in and tell us. So, you know, maybe we could discuss that on our bonus episode next week, because I don't understand it. I mean, maybe it's just that it takes so much time, and you know, most people aren't doing a podcast about it, and you know, don't like have to dig into it. You know, I don't know. I feel like on my own, and maybe this isn't true because I've never done it prior to this, but I think it was fun to dig into it, and I think I would do it. I wasn't like a huge Autechre fan when this album was like released, but I think like had I been, I would have been like so on board and like so excited and like wanting to dig into all this. So I don't know. It's strange. I'd really like to hear, you know, what people think about that.
I mean, I get it because it was like prior to these past 2 weeks, I feel like I was in the same camp where I would have said that this is a mixed bag with some high highs and some low lows. And it's maybe not worth the work to parse all those things out. But having spent some serious time with it, I mean, I feel like it is such a distinct, like interesting project. Indeed, it's like an album that goes beyond just being an album to become, in my mind, like a project about something that really reveals something very interesting about not just Autechre's creative process, but like the idea of creative process in general, you know. And I feel like, you know, going back to what we talked about very early on, like with AltaBiz going into the PLC, like I totally get it because in the past I would put on AltaBiz. I love it. It's gorgeous. Blows me away. And then this like bubbling, gurgling sound on the PLC starts. And I'm like, oh fuck, man, what happened to AltaBiz? Like I was thinking that, but then just like wait 30 seconds. And then you'll start to hear those lush chords like underneath. Same thing, like, you know, you're feeling Rail, everybody loves it, it's so awesome, and then you go right into Full Three and you're like, oh fuck, man, we're in like whoosh territory now. I was digging that. But like, listen to how it connects back to Rail, how it then connects forward to FWZE. Like, you just gotta do some work and then it will start to make sense.
Yeah, I think that's really, you know, true. This is a record that requires work. Well, what do you think about the Choristus Extended Universe? We're doing another listener email episode next week, so send us your thoughts, gunkcastpod@gmail.com. Next episode, proper episode rather, in 2 weeks, Oversteps and Move of 10. We want your opinions and hot takes on that too. gunkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up, YouTube, stay connected. Twitter, Instagram @GunkCastPod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.